I was just going to ask, first of all, because I asked about Jack Rydell to begin with. I have a certain number of questions that I usually ask people. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to start actually by asking you about your connection with Jack Rydell and perhaps about the, if there is such a community of writers that you sort of deal with, in that, you know, this is the Michigan Writers Series, so it's important to know about communities that may be going on in the Detroit area, for instance.
Well, I met Jack for the first time here at Michigan mm. State when he read. Mm. So I've read about him and I've read his work for years because mm-hmm. I've always lived in Michigan, but I never actually met him. So, mm-hmm. I think that's the way it is in Michigan a lot. We're kind of separated geographically, and we don't seem to have a center of poetry anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like San Francisco or New York. So we're all kind of on our isolated little islands, and we know of each other. And I think for the most part we respect each other, but mm-hmm. I haven't felt that. I haven't felt like a community of writers. Yeah, because I don't get together with them very often, right. And the readings from me, you know, it's minimally usually an hour or more to drive to Ann Arbor mm-hmm. or to Michigan State or someplace where there's a reading. Mm-hmm. So it is difficult.
How did you know about this? I'm not plugging the program here, but how did you know about the reading here?
Well, I teach creative writing at Oakland mm-hmm. Community College, and I give extra credit to my students who attend a poetry or a fiction reading mm-hmm. and write up a one-page response to it. So every year, I scour the internet and mm-hmm. and I find all the reading mm-hmm. series. So right. I always give them all Michigan State's readings mm-hmm. and I give them Ann Arbor's and give them mm-hmm. Oakland U and wherever there's some place they could drive to and hear mm-hmm. poets read or fiction writers read. Mm-hmm.
So do you go to readings as well?
Yes.
Often? Ann Arbor mostly is the shaman reading to the shaman drum, right?
Shaman drum yeah. and the university there. Yeah. I mean, I went and heard Frank Bedard maybe 2 weeks ago, and mm-hmm. 2 weeks before that heard Stu Dybeck at mm-hmm. shaman drum. So, mm-hmm. But it's not that often, actually. I don't mm-hmm. get out and hear that many. Mm-hmm. I should do more.
Yeah. That actually leads to one of two questions, one of which is... you mentioned teaching, and this became more interesting on the walk up here, or the ride up here, that I realized that you were a dean, and you have a PhD in education, right?
Correct.
But you're teaching, right now you're teaching poetry workshops, you're teaching creative writing, but you teach a number of other more academic classes, I should say, more academic classes. I mean, a poetry should be an academic
right.
study, and of course it is, but you teach other kinds of courses as well, which is unusual for people that we might get in for a reading series. They teach almost exclusively creative writing classes. Yeah. So the question is always, you know, how does teaching inform your writing, or how does it, how do you sort of... bring together both worlds.
Mm-hmm. Well, I teach Composition 1 and Composition 2 and Intro to Creative Writing and Advanced Creative Writing and Introduction to Literature, Poetry, and Drama. So those are the main courses that I teach. And I think they all inform the way I write. Yeah. I mean, when I'm reading and talking about writing composition, I mean, just, you know, nonfiction argument papers or persuasive papers or... problem-solving papers. You know, to me, all writing is good writing. So, personally, if I'm writing an essay myself, I feel good. If I don't have to be writing poems all the time, if I'm writing fiction, or if I'm writing a play, as long as I'm writing something, I feel good about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I'm playing with language, and delighting in language, and therefore that's going to make me a better writer in general. Mm-hmm. So I've probably published 30 or so academic papers, mm-hmm. I have three coming out right now, and one in college teaching, one in college and university, and one in teaching English at the two-year colleges. Mm-hmm. And I've written some more that I've just submitted for publication. Mm. So I just like to write, mm-hmm. and I don't care what it is.
So you're about the process.
Exactly.
But obviously there is a difference between composing poetry and composing an article for publication.
I suppose there is, and I acknowledge that. But I also, what I like in poetry, which may be, the leaping, the surprise mm-hmm. in language, I also like that in an essay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it when an essay surprises, when I'm reading one, or when I'm writing one, when it takes a turn that I wasn't quite expecting, mm-hmm. or provides me with a sentence, an image that strikes me.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you're a writer of, truly a writer of all kinds in all kinds of genres, and I haven't read these, but I saw that you're a playwright as well, and I've actually had plays performed. Can you give some sense of the background for that?
Yeah, I started writing plays probably maybe 6 or 7 years ago in earnest. And it was partly because I was teaching it. Mm. I mean, in our introduction to creative writing course, we do poetry, fiction, and one-act plays. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how can I teach my students how to write one-act plays if I've never written them?
They used to do that here, the introductory creative. In fact, I taught one.
Yeah.
I taught several. You teach all genres.
Right. Yeah. And so I thought I better start doing this, and I did, and then I entered some contests, and so I've had three plays performed off-Broadway in New York, and then I have another one that's being performed at the end of this month at the Nantucket Theater on Nantucket Island. And I've had them performed in Flint at the Buckham Alley Theater. I had five one-act plays. I won like a new playwriting contest. So I've been lucky actually to see a number of my plays done, and I've one play, actually, Finding the Muse, I've seen performed three times by three different directors and actors. So it's been three completely different plays.
So you have seen the productions of all the plays that have seen production?
Not all. I missed one in New York. I just couldn't get away. And mm-hmm. and I'm probably going to miss the one in Nantucket because mm-hmm. it's two weekends, the end of April, which is the end of the semester. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know how I can get away to do it with all the papers and grading.
Was that nerve-wracking? Did you just show up to see the play, or were you part of at all of the production process?
The very first one I was, which is just one act in New York, I watched the rehearsals, the director asked me questions, the actors asked me questions. What were you thinking? What was the guy doing here or there? So, I was a part of it, and it was just fun, mm-hmm. and I still say it's fun. I mean, I've been a poet, for 25 years, so the thought of actually having somebody else read your work, and having an audience is mm-hmm. so foreign to to poets that I'm just reveling in it,
Yeah, well, it's a much different way of seeing your work realized, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tell my students, I say, all you're doing is giving birth to it. You mm-hmm. write it, you give birth, but the director and the actors, they make it walk, mm-hmm. they make it run. I definitely have a new appreciation for directors and actors because of what they do with the work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just write the words. Mm-hmm. I don't write how do they get on stage and what are they doing while they're on stage and while they're saying these lines, and that's all added, mm-hmm. So it's really a much more of a collaborative effort than is mm-hmm. poetry.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that one was called After Godot.
Yes. Yeah.
There seems, I mean, Beckett is one of the playwrights that most if poets have read any sort of drama whatsoever, they've read Beckett in the second part of the 20th century. Why do you think that is?
You know, that's a great question. That's a doctoral dissertation question right there. Yeah. Why is that? What is appealing about him? Of course, I think any playwright knows Beckett and mm-hmm. has read Beckett. And I personally just have this a likeness for him, an affinity for him that I don't have for as many other playwrights for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of sparse, barren, absurd world mm-hmm. that we write about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen that, and this is a crossover question too. I've seen that in, I was only able to read the last March Street book, mm-hmm. or the chapbook.
I Dance Back.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can see that, you know, there's a sort of existential, there's an existential aesthetic to a lot of that work. And you mentioned Frank Bidart before, mm-hmm. and you can see that as well. And maybe that has something to do with it, that we're all existential.
Yeah, maybe that's it. We're all wannabe existentialists.
Right, right.
But he appeals to a nerve in me that that maybe I'm afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore I want to explore it. And in that play, actually, you know, the age-old question is, what will Godot tell these two bums? So I actually just...
If he ever comes.
Yeah, well, I had him come and give the bums, to, you know, some rules for living. And now they don't know what the play starts with, them yeah. not knowing what to do with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in the same quandary.
Mm-hmm.
They're waiting for him, and now that he's come, they don't know what to do with what he's given, what Godot mm-hmm. has given them.
Right.
So it's fun.
Excellent. Was that one that got played in New York?
Yeah, that was actually done about 6 times in New York at the theater studio.
Yeah.
And it was done by 2 different directors, too, and actors. Another director picked it up after it was performed the first time.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Michigan. This is the Michigan Writers Series. And maybe these questions are all connected. I'm not sure. But you said on the way up that you've lived in Michigan your whole life.
Correct.
The question is usually, you know, how does living in Michigan make you the writer that you are? And how is that different than living on the East Coast or the West Coast? Or I suppose you don't know because you've never lived in those places.
Right. Well, I think for me that I have 2 answers to that question. One is that we do, Michigan writers, I think, do have this sense of isolation. So I prefer to look at that in a good way, to say that I'm not overtly influenced by another group of people, mm-hmm. groups of writers. Because I'm really, I don't meet with writers every mm-hmm. week. I'm not part of a group. So I'm kind of left out in the cold. Maybe this is where Beckett comes in. I'm left out in the cold and I'm writing on my own and by myself, and I don't know who's going to read.
With a bloody tarp over you.
With a tarp over me, or buried to my waist in sand.
Right.
And 2, I think for me the pronounced seasons have such an effect that I don't think I could live in California or someplace where there isn't this clear spring and summer and fall and winter, because each season gives me a new reason to write
mm-hmm.
and new material to write.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, every spring I'm writing this kind of spring poems because of the weather and the temperature and the birds. And if I didn't have those kinds of seasons, I'm not sure what I would write about all the time.
Atmosphere, landscape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Natural things for creative writing. Just one last question. The poem Only So Much Know, which is about rejection from I've got to ask. We can edit this out later if you want. But I've got to ask about this because it is. It seems to me to be, because of what is talked about in the poem, is a pre-9/11 poem. Do you still read this poem?
Only so much to know. Yeah, I have actually. Yeah. I read it at Adrian College.
There's terrorism.
I know there is. Hopefully, nobody will catch me.
Yeah.
It was written pre-9/11, so that helps too.
Yeah.
I remember getting chastised by an editor. It was an editor of a magazine called Caliban.
Mm-hmm.
They took two of my poems, and I had sent them this one, Only So Much Know. And the guy wrote back and said, I'm accepting these two poems, but I cannot understand how you could even possibly write Only So Much Know. And went on to criticize me for that kind of mentality that publication is important and, that's what we write for, which I didn't think that's what I was saying, but it was just a very odd acceptance letter, probably the oddest acceptance letter I've ever had. And the two poems he took were actually idiot poems. Like the fantasy of an idiot.
Right. Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, so I should write more idiot poems, but I shouldn't write about rejection.
Uh-huh. Are there pieces that you won't read aloud in front of an audience for whatever reasons that you've published in book form?
No.
Yeah.
The only ones I won't read will be ones my kids or my wife, if they're going to be in the audience, request that I not read, because there are some fairly intimate or embarrassing parts to the poems. But if they hadn't made that request, I think I'm beyond being embarrassed myself about what I write.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me
anymore. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Yourself?
No,
yeah.
This has been great.
Easy
talking
to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.